News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 23rd of October, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you all kinds of interesting stuff, including Apple. We'll look at new products and a new iPod tax. The UN tries to take over the internet in a new version of a great office suite. We'd really like to talk to you about all of this stuff. So give us a call on the numbers you just heard, and we'll be talking to you about all kinds of interesting things. The first thing we want to talk about is World of Warcraft. If you're any sort of a gamer, you've at least heard of World of Warcraft.
Or WoW, as it's known as.
Right. Rumors are flying about spyware in the software. Blizzard, who makes the game, says it's actually there, but it's not really spyware. Particularly since you agreed to install it. What they've done is they've added some software into the product that checks to see if you're running a legitimate version and not running any of the robots and stuff that make the program easier to use and are basically cheats. And more importantly, even though that's running in the background, you agreed to it because in the end user license agreement, it said we're going to install this stuff, and you clicked yes. Now the thing is, it's just World of Warcraft.
But no one ever reads those Angelus.
Well, but that's the whole thing. The question I have for everybody is: how do you feel about all this sneakware? Do any of you? I mean, this stuff is becoming a lot more common every day. Sure, they mentioned something about it in the end user license agreement, but who reads that?
Did you just coin a new term?
Sneakware?
Sneakware?
I don't know if I coined it, but we're using it. This is a question I have for you folks. Call in and let us know what you think. How do you feel about sneakware? Do you actually read the end user license agreements? Those are the things that when you first boot up, it says, please read this and click I agree or whatever. And usually it's pages and pages of legal verbiage. Oh, thank you so much. Look at you. You're so good. He's so good to me. I have a cold and I have a little post-nasal drip and Rob just brought me water. He's such a nice guy. See, he's our producer and that means he takes care of us.
Normally I don't get beverages.
He doesn't get beverages. He's not a beverage-getting kind of guy, but he got this for me.
Usually he asks us to get his beverage.
He does actually do that during the break. That's very true. But he was nice enough to do this for me, so I'm very appreciative. But the reality is, do you actually read end-user license agreements? And do you ever say no? Frankly, I read every end-user license agreement that comes my way, and I'm always amused by them.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. Aren't they about 5, 6, 7 pages long? I mean, who really reads those things?
And they're all legal verbiage. You can't understand what they say anyway.
You have to be a lawyer to understand what they're saying.
That's exactly right. But if you don't read them, you find you've agreed to installing spyware and extra software and all this other stuff. Half the things that people are saying are viruses and all this other hoo-ha are actually, in fact, things you agreed to install by clicking yes to the end user license agreement. Frankly, I read everyone that comes by me, and I've said no. There's software I simply haven't installed because I didn't like the end user license agreement.
A lot of times, though, it's the, as you mentioned, it's the legalese and marketing rhetoric. You know, we're going to install marketing data.
Right.
Okay, that's spyware.
Right.
What was the other one that was big? Scalable processor utilization. So we're going to use your processor when you're not.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then now people do that all the time with things like SETI at home and the folding at home. SETI at home is looking for evidence of alien messages. Folding at home is it's folding proteins to look for antibiotics and stuff, which is a really pretty neat thing. There's another one from the Cancer Institute looking for cures for cancer. Those are all great things to devote your processor to, but only if you decide to do it, only if you make the choice. When it comes down to your end user license agreement, folks, you really need to read these things. I used to track them. I used to keep track of them and save them all out and write them all down and point out to people what they were in fact signing for. There was an early license agreement for a version of Microsoft's media player that actually said, "We reserve the right to go into your machine and look at anything on your machine to see if you've stolen music." And, oh, by the way, we reserve the right to let any third party do that.
Through our mechanism.
Now, my question is, who are these third parties? And what are they really looking for? And what are they taking and what are they not taking?
Well, that was one of the big controversies over Prodigy when it first came out, 20 years ago now?
Yeah, right.
That it reserved this allocation block on your hard drive for storing files. And it didn't erase that piece of space. It just said, I'm going to use this space. So somebody started looking into what that space is and found files.
Files they
had deleted, and that's the way the mechanisms work.
Right.
When you delete a file from your computer, it doesn't actually delete it from the hard drive. It just says this space is free to use by some other program, which is why undelete programs work, which are great when you want them to. But it also means that anyone else can come by your computer and find things that you thought you've deleted.
Right, exactly. And that's the real problem. That we've talked about before, when you delete something, let's say you want to give your hard drive to somebody, your old machine to somebody. You've deleted all your files. They're not really gone, and it's a real simple utility to get them back again. That's why we always get calls about things like Zero Disk and other products like that that will actually zero out your hard drive.
We should probably mention, though, that when you do want to give your computer to someone, you should erase all of your files.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We hear that all the time from people. You know, I bought this used computer, and I don't know his password. Well, he shouldn't have left his stuff on there to be asking you for a password anyway.
Right. You should reformat the hard drive, leave a blank password, then the next person can set a password.
Right. Or just reformat the hard drive, don't put any OS on it, and hand them the OS disk that was supposed to be with the computer.
In fact, now there's that other part of the problem.
There's the other problem. People don't get OS disks anymore. If you have a restore disk with your computer, you can run that and include it along. But a lot of people, after several years of using their computer, have lost their restore disks.
Right.
And you technically cannot sell your computer without including the CD that it came with.
Right. And you're not supposed to move. See,
you're supposed to ask Microsoft to get a transfer of license.
Right, right. You're not supposed to give some because you don't actually own the copy of the operating system. You've leased a copy of the. This goes back to the DVD thing we were talking about earlier. You've leased a copy of the operating system for use with that machine by you.
Right.
So if it's not that machine anymore,
which is the end user license, we're saying you should read.
Right. If it's not that machine anymore, the lease is now invalid. If it's not you anymore, the lease is now invalid. So to be legal, to do things, legally, you need to say, I'll be happy to give you the machine. The machine is yours. You can do anything you want with it. You just can't give the operating system with it unless you get an okay from Microsoft.
And the same thing for any application software. You have to get a transfer of license from each of the companies that installed software when you purchase software for that computer.
Right. And that's why you should run Linux, because you can just give anything you want to anybody you want, anytime you want, and it all works out. But it's an interesting problem. And the thing you need to know here is that when you just click I agree to that end user license agreement, you may in fact be agreeing to things you would never agree to if you knew you were agreeing to them. Did that make sense?
In one of the early versions of, I think it might have been CompuServe too, we ran into this at the CIDR group. Someone actually read the agreement, and the big thing in BBSs and bulletin boards in the early days was you posted information onto the board. You answered somebody's question or you asked the question yourself. And there was a little clause in the license agreement that anything you posted to CompuServe's board became owned by CompuServe. You lost your copyright on things you wrote.
Right.
And we had a guy who wouldn't join the services because of that.
Sure. Well, I agree with them.
Yeah.
Now, let me state wholeheartedly and full out right here, what you post on the Soundbites website or on the Ask Nick website are, in fact, your property. I don't claim them. Steve doesn't claim them. Dave doesn't claim them. We don't even like your opinion, so we certainly don't want to own them. All right, listen, when we come back, we're going to talk about Apple. They're charging an iPod tax. Find out all about it when we come back after these messages with Dave Enright. No, no, not Dave Enright. Well, we'll tell you where Dave is when we come back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. PCs to Macs. These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Apple is charging an iPod tax, not to you, but to the people who want to make peripherals for the product. What this is about is Apple is basically saying that they want to seek royalties from accessory makers who want to display a made-for-iPod logo on their products. This applies to devices that connect electrically to the player, not to cosmetic things like cases and stuff like that. Now, Apple's made the program a requirement for manufacturers who want their gadgets to plug into the dock connector at the bottom of the music player. Apple is telling iPod accessory providers they must pay it royalties if they intend to make devices that connect electrically to the music player. This could, of course, generate millions of additional dollars for Apple, but it's also causing a certain amount of grumbling among the companies that have to play along. What do we think about this?
Well, the rumors are that the tax, no one knows for sure, but the rumors are that the tax is 10% of the price. So your $40 charger that plugs into the bottom of the connector, Apple gets $4. It's one of those it's one of those arguments on both sides of the platform that Apple has a right to defend their trademark, and if you want to use the iPod name, you should pay a little bit for it, and if you want to use the Apple engineering to connect into that dock, you should probably pay a little bit for it. You know, if you make auto parts and you want to put the Ford logo on your box, should you pay Ford for the privilege of using the Ford logo?
Yeah, but on the other side of the coin, it's those additional things that make the product more saleable.
Right.
So should you pay to assist in the sales of the initial product?
And on the other hand, how many hands can we have?
We can have as many as we want.
On the other hand,
we should go to tentacles.
Tentacles, yeah. The iPod has been such a stellar success, and one of the interesting things that Apple mentions in a lot of their press, over 1,000 companies have popped up specifically creating iPod accessories. So it's this huge marketing success, and it's really cool buying accessories. You know, ask your wife or your girlfriend or your significant other. You know, it's not the thing that counts. It's the accessories for the thing that counts.
Well, this is what I said. You know, every year we recommend what people buy for Christmas or birthdays to people. And I always say, buy them an iPod because it's the gift that keeps on giving. You can get music for it. You can get accessories for it, and you never run out of stuff to buy.
And so of those thousands of companies making, you know, hopefully hundreds of millions of dollars themselves, Apple's missing out on some of that revenue that their product is generating.
Now, on the other hand, here's our next business venture. We create our own dock for the iPod. We pay our 10%, and we charge everybody else 5%.
Interesting.
Huh?
That means we're losing 5%.
No, we charge everybody else 5% to connect to us.
Right.
As opposed to 10% to connect to Apple.
Well, that's always the greatest.
Or we just let them connect for free.
Yeah. That's always the greatest goal in marketing and product development, is you want to make the next huge thing that everyone just has to have.
Right. Apple has done that.
And Apple's done it
now. The question is, yeah, they're missing out on all this additional revenue, but on the other hand, they're making a bucket load of money. Why don't they just be happy with what they've got?
If you were an Apple shareholder, you'd want them to make more money, so your shares grew.
It's the shareholders. It's greed. Well, is it the greed is good? That was
that goes back. Well, whose argument was that? What's the basic purpose of a company?
To make money for the shareholders.
Right.
I understand that.
And so making great products, you know, making things that people want to buy is secondary.
Right.
You're supposed to make money for your shareholders.
Right, right. That is
maximizing profits
that
to
is the
shareholders.
That is a publicly owned company. That's why I would never take any company I'm in public.
Yeah, because you want to keep the profits yourself.
Because I don't necessarily need to make that much money to be happy.
Right.
But it just seems to me that obviously there are good things on both sides of it. The real question is not should they do this or do they have the right to do this, but what will the marketplace do in return? It really does come down to the fact where somebody's going to get porky enough to make something you can connect to that they won't charge for, and then Apple will lose even more revenue because nobody's going to want their basic dock.
Or Apple. Well, it depends on the licensing agreements that companies sign when they want to make an iPod, if they sign anything, to use the Apple name. We've already seen some peripheral companies are saying works with portable MP3 players.
Right.
Generically, and you know it's for the iPod because it looks like the picture of an iPod on the
box.
Right. So is Apple going to be able to sue someone who doesn't pay the royalty? Depends on their contracts. And one of the really interesting things that we've run into over the years is that a lot of different companies have done this. And some of it do it the other way. We're always annoyed in the Apple world that at the end of every like Dell computer ad or Gateway computer ad, the little Intel chime goes up, Intel inside, mm-hmm. which we've always said is a warning, and we're going to have to stop that now.
That's right.
Intel,
how quickly you change your tune.
Yeah. Intel pays each company to put that logo on their ad.
Right.
So they do it the other way around. Apple charges you to use the Apple logo. Intel pays you to use the Intel logo.
Well, somebody's doing it wrong. I'll tell you that right now. Listen. That's the bad side of Apple. On the good side of Apple, they've introduced a bunch of nifty upgrades. Steve's going to tell us all about them and why we should dump everything we own and pick one up. that just made him smile. Steve actually smiled. Write this date down. When we come back from the break, we'll be back with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
County Executive. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm not Dave Enright. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We should tell everybody where Dave Enright is. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. We're hoping he evades the bounty hunters and is back here next week. Listen, we talked last time about the bad stuff Apple's doing. Let's talk about the good stuff. As many people speculated, Apple unveiled upgrades to the PowerBook and the Power Mac lines, although no PowerBook G5.
Yeah, another week, another new product announcement.
Exactly. They also introduced a new professional photography application known as Aperture, which rounds out their software lineup for creative professionals. So, Steve, tell us all about this, and what do you think they'll announce next week?
The PowerBook upgrades were almost... well, blah.
Anticlimactic.
That was the word I was trying to reach for. The screen resolutions are higher, so now the 15-inch has the resolution the 17-inch did, and the 17-inch is even higher yet. 17-inch is now HD ready, so it has enough resolution to do HD on the 17-inch. The clock speeds are up a little bit. They've also streamlined the product line a little. Every model now has the DVD burner super drive, so instead of 6 models, there's only 3. But it's not that big of an upgrade. And it's not the PowerBook G5 that everyone was anticipating.
Right.
And that still goes back to IBM's inability to ship a low-power G5.
Which is the whole reason that they're moving to Intel.
They're moving to Intel. You could have a PowerBook G5 if you didn't mind a 20-minute battery life. Or a 20-mile extension cord. the really cool stuff came out in the new Power Mac G5, and it's using the new IBM dual-core processor, and similar to what Intel and AMD have been offering for a little while now. And they're calling it the Power Mac G5 Dual, and they're back to a single processor that's dual-core, which in theory and technical benchmarks is faster than a dual processor. Because a single processor with a dual core can talk to itself faster, and also has the ability to.
If you think that's a good thing,
yeah. So it makes your machines run even faster, and at the high end they have a dual core that they're calling the Power Mac G5 Quad. So it's five processors. Four. It's a G5 with four processor cores.
This is the kind of math that Macs do. We'll stick with the Intel box. Thank you.
So it's a G5 with four processor cores and can run really, really fast, up to 70% faster than the previous dual 2.7, which was two processor cores. The other things that they've added into it, and Apple has always been known for this, not just upgrading one little piece. They upgrade the entire platform. They've moved to PCI Express architecture for the expansion slots, including a 16-lane video processor. So we have all this new terminology we have to learn.
16-lane video processor?
16-lane PCI Express slot for your video card.
So you have... It's not just the express lane, it's the express 16 lane.
16 lane, yeah.
Are they all going in the same direction?
Mostly the same direction. You have two fours, an 8, and a 16, so you have different speeds. So a low-speed peripheral card can go in the 4 lane, and the super high-speed video card can go in the 16 lane. And one of the
you got a big rig, it's got to stay over to the left.
Right.
To
the right, yeah. No trucks in the left lane. So it can really do some amazing graphics. They're selling a $1,600 graphics card.
Holy mother of pearl.
Half a gig of RAM in the 16 lane, and it's some god-awful trillion pixels per second. And from what we've been seeing around the internet, this NVIDIA card is normally like $3,000 when you buy it separately from other companies. So a lot of the extra stuff built in to the new PowerMac G5 Quad. And the real interesting thing is that people have started comparing it to the Opteron dual-core processor machines that Dell is offering. A Dell dual-core, so a Dell Quad machine is $6,000. The Apple is $3,500.
Right.
So Apple, for a similar configured machine, is a couple $1,000s less than a comparable PC.
Right, right. Cool. All right, we have, let's go to the phones. Why not? Let's talk to Patty from Kendall, New York. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. My question is about Word.
Sure.
I have Office 2000 installed on my computer I purchased it back in 2000. Since then, I bought a new computer. And I got Word 2002 with it. It came with the Works package. And ever since then, it's been terribly slow booting and closing. So I did a little research on the internet, and I found a couple of things that helped, but it's still not quite as fast as launching Excel and other parts of the Office package. One thing that I noticed makes a huge difference is when using the shortcut on the desktop, you can use the /A switch to bypass the normal ..
Right.
But if I'm not using the shortcut, that doesn't happen. I guess I don't understand.
Okay,
the normal
.. if you use the /A, it boots fast.
Yes.
Okay, here's your deal. What Patty's talking about is in Word, when you start up Word, if you started it from a command line or from a shortcut that you've changed, and you say /A, it doesn't load the normal .. Normal .. is the document template that gives you your normal, the way the page is set up and the font you use and everything else. What clearly has happened is there's a macro in the normal .dot, which is slowing down the startup of the system.
Okay.
Now, if you're lucky, that macro is something you installed on purpose with, for example, your Palm Pilot.
Or the Acrobat PDF reader.
The Acrobat PDF reader. If you're not lucky, it's a virus. So the... Yes?
It could very well be. I do have ActiveSync installed. I do have a PDA that I synchronize with it, and I have actually changed my margin settings for my default Word document.
Right, that's what's normally stored in the normal document is your default margins, your default font.
Okay.
The first easy step is to find that normal.dot and remove it from the Microsoft Office folder, and then it will make a brand new empty normal.dot on your next launch of Word.
Right. So if you just do a search for normal.dot. And just rename it to something like oldnormal.dot. Restart Word, it'll make a new normal, and you'll be back to, normal. Without all those templates. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new display. It's better than a display. It's better than paper. It's electronic paper. Find out when we come back on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham! Wants to get you out of the cold. It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. It's like my dogs. You try to hand them like a biscuit, and they've already got a bone in their mouth. They try to take both. They try to do both. They can't do it. It was very funny. Rob had his cord in his mouth. I don't know why.
What are you talking about?
Nothing.
Never mind.
Nothing. I'm just moving on. I'm going to talk about electronic paper. It's in color now. Electronic paper's in color. Electronic paper's been kind of below our radar, but it's really coming along nicely. Electronic paper is basically a very, very thin, flexible video display that actually kind of looks like a sheet of paper. It actually uses ambient light like a newspaper does. You read it by, you know, daylight. It doesn't have its own glow to it. And
it's just like computers. It won't catch on.
You're right. I think it's a fad. It's just a fad.
Right.
But while the fad is out there, what's really nice is that it's very thin. If they can just get it cheaper, it's not really cheap yet. But they have a version now that's in color. And the real question is, do you think e-paper, you know, aside from curmudgeon Rob, I'm supposed to be the curmudgeon on the show, do you think e-paper will really take over? And what does this bode for new laptop forms and new iPods and things like that?
We see this on sci-fi TV shows all the time where the guy has a flexi, you know, they called it on Andromeda, a little flexible sheet of paper. You unroll it. It displays all your computer screen, your graphics and displays, so it's easy to carry
the
with
Roddenberry
you.
Show, something Earth, Battlefield Earth.
Earth Final Conflict.
Earth Final Conflict.
Yep.
They had this little tube thing and pulled the
screen out of it.
Out of the side. I thought that was so cool.
Yep. So they're saying this new display is 100 dpi and 300 microns thick.
300 microns thick.
So there's really, really thin, really, really cool. So we've already been seeing the laptop screens are getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And then that translating into the desktop flat panel screens are getting so thin. Now, you know, you just have a sheet of paper on your wall, basically, or in your laptop, and that's the whole screen.
I'd love
Should
to
be
have
really cool.
I'd love to have a laptop that basically had, you know, they have this laser beam thing that projects a picture of a keyboard on the desktop, and as you type on that picture, it picks up where your fingers are and actually translates that into typing. I'd love to have a screen that you pull up, that's the keyboard, you're done.
You want to talk about carpal tunnel. Imagine pegging on
a hard
desk.
Yeah, I know, that would be very hard. That would be very hard if you had any sort of touch at all. You'd have to have a real light touch to get past it.
Unless they have like a little pad or something.
Right. But the point is, for any sort of really portable device that you didn't type on a lot, that would be so cool. That would be so cool. So we'll keep you informed of what's going on with electronic paper as it gets more and more feasible for us. In the meantime, we'll talk to Tom from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. I got a compact Passario. It's a little bit older, running XP Service Pack 2. And when I try to go into an Internet Explorer, I get a runtime error. And I don't usually use IE except for maintaining a website that I have to update periodically.
Right. And does it tell you this runtime error is in the system or is it in Java or what's
it's
the deal?
Telling me program C colon program files Internet Explorer IE EXP, EXE application has requested the runtime to terminate it in an unusual way. Please contact application support team for more information.
That's a virus. IE.exe is not the name of the program that runs Internet Explorer.
Right.
That is iExplorer.exe.
Right. So you've got a virus.
What's that?
You've got a virus.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
So, congratulations. So you need to dance the security tango.
You know, and I've done that, and somehow this thing snuck in, because I try to keep my virus updated. I use McAfee Security Center.
Right. Well, the problem is that you need to run the tango regularly.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, the Security Tango is at www.securitytango.com.
Yeah, and I actually updated all those yesterday afternoon. The one thing I've got a little bit of concern about doing, though, is turning off the restore.
That's probably where it's hiding then.
Okay.
The simple reality is that if you don't turn it off, you can't guarantee you're going to get everything. If you do turn it off, you lose the ability to go back.
Yep.
And I don't have an answer for you except that it's very clear to me that IE.exe is hiding in the restore, and every time you clean it out, it's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
So just follow step by step your the tango.
Don't skip any steps because otherwise it's not a tango.
And okay. the other concern there that always comes up is we talk about make sure you do your backup. And I was just about to mention do a backup before you turn off your restore points, but then your backup will have the virus in it.
That's true.
So if you ever have to restore from a backup, that may be where viruses are coming back in as well.
Right. Right. And it's a vicious cycle, and I'm sorry, but your best bet at this point is to clean out the system and then do a backup. I really hate to say that, but that's the way it's got to be. The tango, you get to make some tough choices. Listen, we're going to take another break. But when we come back, yes, it's another virus for another Microsoft patch. Join us after the break to find out more about this as we come back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Excellent. On News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Microsoft's update didn't work for at least one of their patches. I know. Thank God you were sitting down.
Seriously, I'm shocked.
I hope those people who were out driving didn't run off the road when I said that. I should have warned you ahead of time, and I apologize. If you're running Windows 2000, the DirectX Media Player subsystem can allow someone to take control of your system. Okay, pay attention to what I just said. Your media player can allow somebody to take control of your entire computer. Your media player. Is that reasonable?
That's not right.
That's not right. Is it reasonable to expect that a problem in a media player can let somebody own you? Or is just one more example of why many people don't trust Windows? They have integrated everything so deeply into the operating system that a malformed audio can take over your system. What? That's not right. I don't care what anybody says. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. If I run Twin Player, for example, which is a great media player, there's no way you can take over my system using Twin Player. If I'm on my Linux box, or if I'm running Winamp on Windows, you can't take over my system from Winamp. If I'm on Linux, you can't take over my system with XMMS. How come you can take over my system with Windows Media Player? It's just badly conceived piece of software. Yes, they have to deeply embed it into the operating system. But they don't have to do that, and in fact, they've proven that in the case in Europe where they're taking it out again.
Well, even as witnessed by the other media players that are available, they're not deeply embedded, and they work fine.
They work just fine. I'll tell you what: I never use Windows Media Player. If I'm not running Winamp, I'm running Twin Player from TwinSoftware.com. Maybe you want to put that link up there. I don't get it. I don't get why people think that it's okay for a media player to be able to take over your operating system. And I don't want to be the guy in a hospital who's got to follow HIPAA laws saying to my boss, yeah, well, we're not HIPAA compliant because there's a media player in the operating system that lets people take over. Well, we don't run the media player. Yeah, but you can't remove it. It just makes me crazy. I'm sorry. I'm ranting. I'm on my soapbox. It just makes me crazy. I understand Microsoft's need to own the world. I understand their need to provide you with every single piece of software on earth. And I understand their need to embed it deeply in the operating system so you can't get rid of it and you won't be tempted to use something that just might possibly be better. But the point here is, if you're going to have something that actually makes danger to the system, then you need to make sure that I can delete it if I need to delete it, that I can remove it from the operating system if that's my choice. Now, this goes back to the fact that I don't own the operating system. I only lease it, and I lease it the way they give it to me. But even when I lease a car, I can say I want this, I don't want that before I sign the lease. You can't do that with Microsoft. You cannot pick and choose. There's no a la carte menu. It's all or nothing. And I don't like. Call in and tell us what you think. Don't leave me sitting here ranting by myself. Tell me what you think of this stuff. Give us a call. You already know the numbers, but I'll tell you what they are just to make you happy. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 222-1180. That's 222-1180. 222, I like just saying 222. If you're outside the 585 area code, call us toll free. The Choice One toll free line from anywhere, anytime, any place, anything. If you're lonely, call me. 800-295-1180. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer, just star 1180 gets you here. That works. So there really is no excuse not for not to give us a call and tell me what you think of this whole media player business. It just makes me crazy. I never use the Windows Media Player. If I have to look at a Windows Media file, I go over to my Linux box and do it in Totem so that I can be sure that nothing's being sent back and nothing's taking over my system. If I need to, I use the Twin Player from twinsoftware.com, which is a pretty neat little product.
It's not twinsoftware.com. I'm trying to find it. Twin Software is business applications.
It's Twin something.
Yeah. There's too many Twin programs. Minnesota Twins.
It's not Twin Software? Well, that shows what I know.
Twins hyphen software.
Yeah.
Twins video player.
Twin video player. Twin, I think, is just Twin, not Twins. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll find it and we'll put it up. Twin Software Online. Twins-software.com.
Right. So that hyphen makes a big difference.
Makes a big difference. Twins-software.com. It's a different media player. It's free. It's a pretty neat little product. If you haven't given it a try, feel free. It's free. It's free. Free, free, free. And it plays lots of different formats. It plays audio. It plays video. It plays a little bit of everything. And it's free. So give it a try and see what you get out of it, because it's a pretty neat little thing. The point is, even though you're stuck with having the Windows Media Player on your system, you're not stuck with running the Windows Media Player. And that's the important part of it. Listen, we're going to take another little break. Following the theme of my rant, Microsoft backs down. You know, if you come back after the break, you're going to find out a lot more about this shocking development. Right now, of course, we have the great Connie Daly, who will be in reading the news and giving you all the up-to-date information on news and weather and stuff like that. We've got lots of people on the line, and we'll be talking to them when we come back, which we're going to do right after all the news and other stuff. I want to thank you for staying tuned for this last hour. Definitely come back for the next hour. We'll talk about Microsoft backing down. I promise not to rant too hard on this one. I'll just report it the way I see it. We'll be back with Steve Ray and me.
News on the hour. Right out. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phones in a moment, but I do want to get the, you know, balanced part here. Microsoft has told the Department of Justice that they're dropping an exclusivity clause in their media player contract with device makers. What this means is they were trying to get people who are making devices that will play Windows Media files to sign an exclusivity clause, meaning they couldn't play anything but Windows Media files. No MP3 files, no nothing. They've now backed down from that, and the Department of Justice came to them, and they received one complaint, and then they backed down. That's pretty amazing for them. They would never have backed down in the past.
It's probably fallout from the Microsoft Real settlement then, that Microsoft lost and had to pay Real some, you know, horrible amount of money.
Right, and they don't really want to do that anymore. Or do we think it's just the success of the iPod? Is it something else? I don't know. Call and tell us what you think. In the meantime, we're going to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Tony from Rochester. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to make a few comments and give you some feedback about
Sure.
your frustration. I've been a Windows XP user for over 2 years now, and I've been completely frustrated with Windows Media Player, because every time I launch that application, it totally takes over the system, like you mentioned. And
yep.
I thought it was interesting to hear someone else have that problem, or at least comment about it. And quickly, I wanted to mention that I recently saw some media about the iPod having some problems because the record industry wanted to put coding into the CDs. It's been going on for a long time, but they put coding into the most recent Dave Matthews CD and
yeah,
a few others.
A lot of CDs are using that type of copy protection now.
Yeah, and they've received some major negative perspectives about that in the recent Rolling Stone that came out.
Yeah, not only that, there was actually, I forget what band it was, but one of the members of one of the bands actually posted in their forum on their website how to break the copy protection so you could put their songs on the iPod.
And it wasn't specifically the iPod. It's those types of copy-protected discs don't play well on any computer, any media player, and they even have trouble with some audio players that are now, you know, the big thing now is the MP3 CDs. If your audio player is new enough to handle an MP3 CD, which is a data disc, it may not play these copy-protected audio CDs either.
Right, and you're absolutely right, Tony. Lots of people are having trouble with them. And it's a problem for people who legitimately... And the only people they're porking off are people who legitimately buy the music. I bought this album and I can't play it on my player. What do I do? Well, we don't care.
Well, I've switched to Winamp I've been a constant Winamp user for over a year, and I haven't been disappointed with the exception of a few script errors when I use custom skins that I have downloaded from their site. But otherwise, I have just completely turned my back on Windows Media Player.
Right, right. And that's for audio. And for video, try that Twins Video Player. Steve's got a link up on our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind
and
you.
And for web browsing, we have Firefox. And for email, we have Thunderbird. So pretty much don't use any Microsoft software.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Okay,
thanks,
well,
Tony. I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. We love those kind of calls. We love people calling in and giving us their opinions because heaven knows we're giving you our opinions. Our next caller is Tim. Tim, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Webster.
Ah, Webster. Oh, that's what that meant. It said web, and I didn't know if it... I was confused. It's my fault entirely. Go ahead. What's your question?
I run Stinger, and Stinger found a virus under the email in the trash folder, actually. And I've been updating and removing trash from my email, and I use Netscape for my email. And it lists the bagel virus, which is probably an attachment in some file I deleted because it was probably from someone I didn't know.
Right.
But it just lists in Stinger, and I can't figure out how to delete it because it's in some subdirectories under mail/pop/trash/, and then a whole bunch of other file names.
Inside of Netscape, you need to empty the trash so it actually deletes the messages that you've told it to trash.
Yeah, the trash in Netscape is not the same as the trash on your desktop.
Okay.
So in Netscape, under File, there should be an empty trash. And that's specifically the trash of your mail, not the trash of your desktop.
Now, if the virus is particularly virulent, which it probably is since Stinger is looking for it, it may prevent you from emptying the trash because it doesn't want to let you delete itself.
Yeah,
so won't running the Tango remove that?
Yes, and then you should be able to empty your trash
in
your mail.
All right, so I should go to run a Tango and then go to the mail program and then empty the trash inside the email program.
Right.
And then it wouldn't hurt to at least run Stinger again after that. Now, do you remember Netscape, Nick? Does it have one giant mail folder, or is it separate individual files?
It depends on which version you're running.
Yeah. Because some of the mail programs, particularly Outlook Express, keep all of your mail in one giant file, which makes it real susceptible to damage, and all your mail gets lost.
Right.
But it also means that it's harder for the antivirus programs to remove a virus from that one giant file.
Right. Well, Tim's lucky in that it's in his trash, so if it damages his trash, we don't really care.
Yeah, hopefully you can empty the trash.
Just empty it and recreate it. Our next caller is Diane calling from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Diane. What's your question?
I'm occasionally having trouble shutting down my computer. It doesn't happen all the time, but when I try to shut it down, it goes to the wallpaper. All the icons go away. It goes to the wallpaper, and it locks there. I have to do an Alt-Control-Delete. It brings all the icons back. Then when I try shutting it shuts down fine.
Well, the Control-Alt-Delete shouldn't bring in the icons back. It should bring up a window listing what programs are still running. What's likely happening is some program is still running that can't quit yet for some reason.
Okay.
And how long do you usually wait before you Control-Alt-Delete?
Oh, Sometimes it's a couple minutes.
There are a lot of reasons that it'll go to the wallpaper and stick there. Sometimes it's actually doing something real, like finishing your updates, although usually it tells you that when it does that. It could be, again, it could be a virus, so you need to dance the tango. It could also be something along the lines of, let's say you've got a USB card plugged in, a little thumb drive plugged in, and that hasn't finished updating yet. The system will wait until it does. Excuse me. So those are just some of the things that could cause that to happen.
When you do the Control-Alt-Delete, does it bring up the task list?
No. Nope. The icons just appear over the wallpaper again, so, and then I can shut down the computer. And again, it doesn't happen every time. I was on the computer this morning. It shut down fine with no problem.
So it's relaunching the desktop program Explorer. What operating system are you running?
Millennium Edition.
Oh, well, there's your problem
right there.
Yeah,
it doesn't bring up the Task Manager under the old OSs.
Right. A couple of things. First, Windows ME is no longer supported by Microsoft, and that means any security updates that Microsoft puts out won't run on ME, so you really need to move to a new operating system.
Okay.
In order to stay safe. And upgrading to a new operating... Oh, how fast is your machine?
Haven't a clue.
Okay. If it's 500 megahertz or more, you're fine with upgrading. If you've got... You should have a minimum of 256 meg, but RAM is pretty cheap. So if you go to half a gig of RAM, 512 meg, that would be best. But if you do that and upgrade the operating system, you'll find the machine runs better and faster, and you'll be a lot safer.
And one of the big problems with ME was that the driver support for running your printer, running your scanner, running your camera, things like that, the drivers didn't work very well. And so that could be one of your problems, is that when you're trying to shut down, one of these drivers isn't unloading the way it needs to.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Good luck.
Thanks.
Our next caller is Linda from Greece with a media player question. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes, we can. Can you hear us?
Very, 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 not very well, but I'll try.
Okay.
Okay. I heard you talk about Windows Media Player.
Yep.
I play something, and Windows Media Player automatically comes up. How do I make sure it never comes up again?
If you install another media player, during the installation, it will ask you, do you want me to be the default player for various types of media? Click them all, make sure they're all checked, and say yes.
And most of the media players will do that. If you have several media players already loaded and want to switch between them, you can, let's see if we can remember this procedure, left-click on a media file, and then shift-right-click, and there's an open with command, and then you can pick the player you want it to open with instead of the Windows Media Player.
Right. Alternately, many of them you can simply, there's something in one of the pull-down menus that says, make me the default, and it'll just go through and make itself the default.
It's sometimes really tricky to get the Microsoft programs to not be the default anymore. They
well,
really want to be.
Yeah, that's part of the deal, isn't it?
Yep.
But that's what you have to do, Linda. Good luck on that. Our next caller is Henry from Rochester. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hello, gentlemen.
Uh-oh. Who came in? Oh.
My questions are about a hard drive. My hard drive on my computer just went. I actually went during the virus scan portion of running the Tango.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly sure it's the hard drive because... I don't hear anything but a clicking sound now whenever used to hear the noise of the hard drive. So I'm fairly certain that that's the hard drive gone.
Yep.
I want to replace the hard drive. Currently has a Western Digital 120 gig 7200 RPM. I've been looking at hard drives. Now I see that there are some that are marked SATA. I don't understand what the difference is.
SATA is the serial ATA. ATA and IDE are basically the same thing.
Okay.
Serial ATA is a new standard that takes, it's similar to the regular ATA drives, but it's a little bit different. It's a little faster. The bus is a little different. You don't have the limit of four drives like you did before. It's a whole, it's a different thing. You, if you don't have a SATA controller, you can't run a SATA drive.
And okay. we've started calling the older ATA standard now parallel ATA, which it was.
Right.
So you might see that marked on some drives now, PATA.
You would think that parallel would be faster than serial.
Because it can send multiple lines at the same time.
Right. But it's, apparently it's not. I don't get that. I will never understand
And
that.
The SATA controller has fewer lines on the cable.
Yes.
It's a smaller cable. So
yes.
How can it be faster?
I don't know.
But it is.
But it is.
Yeah, so you're looking for a standard IDE or ATA drive.
Okay.
And there was also an issue with some of the older computers where 120 gigabytes was the largest hard drive it could support.
Well, this computer is only about a year old.
What's it running?
It's a 3.0 gig Pentium 4.
Yeah, but what operating system?
Windows XP Home.
Yeah, then you're good.
Yeah, you're likely able to run all the way up to the higher drives. But that was it was an interesting history we've seen over the years, that the first hard drives was that 32 meg limit, and then we had a 2 gig limit, and then we had the 120 gig limit. So technology progresses, and we get bigger and bigger and bitter.
And bitter?
And better.
We're getting bitter. Listen, when we come back, we're going to talk about a great office suite that gets a tremendous upgrade, and it's still completely free. Find out all about it when we come back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and Nick Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Soundbites. And I told you when we came back, we would talk about the greatest office suite on earth. It's openoffice.org. That's not only the name of the suite, it's also the URL, openoffice.org. They have a brand new version 2.0. And I've been saying this for a while. They had an egg on their site, and then one day the egg was cracked, and I said, oh, they're almost ready to go, and now there's some sort of bird. I don't know what kind of bird that is, and I don't really care. Eagle, seagull, I don't. Clearly, I'm not an ornithologist of any sort.
It's the mad penguin, apparently.
It could be a mad penguin, for all I know. It's an office suite, like Microsoft Office. It has a word processor. It has a spreadsheet. It has a presentation program like PowerPoint. It has a full database front end, just like Microsoft Access. It's getting great reviews all over the place. It's a phenomenal piece of software. And oh, by the way, it's absolutely free of charge. That's right. It's an entire office suite. What's that, $700 package from Microsoft? If you buy it at retail?
Office Pro, yeah.
Office Pro with Access is $700. This includes, like I said, Writer, which is the word processor, Impress, which is the PowerPoint thing, Math, which is a mathematical equation writer, Draw, which is a vector drawing program, Calc, which is the spreadsheet, and Base, which is the database program. I'm sorry, I'm just clearly drowning in my own bodily juices here. The nice thing about it is it provides full support, native support for the OASIS standard open document format. A bunch of groups have gotten together and created a standard open document format. This format is what's been mandated by some countries as the thing they're going to follow, and here in the United States by some states as the thing they're going to follow, because rather than any sort of proprietary format for documents, which is closed, you don't know what the format is, and you may not be able to read documents written in it 15 or 20 years from now, the OASIS standard open document format is basically all XML and text, which means that anybody should be able to read it at any time. You just read the format and recreate it. It would be easy to do by pretty much anybody. It's a terrific product. I downloaded it. I'm using it myself. It runs great, and it's free. I don't know why you wouldn't download it and give it a try.
And it's sponsored in part by Sun Microsystems, which was one of the very first computer companies, and invented the network and the internet. The
right.
Stanford University Network is what Sun stands for.
Right.
So it's got big, powerful backing. It's got the open source community behind it. So we don't have to worry about a little company, you know, falling apart in a few years.
Right. And it is, again, it's completely open source. So even if the OpenOffice.org people disappeared, the product is still there and would still be available. It's a pretty amazing little product. And like I said, it's completely free. You can install it in addition to Office. So if you already have Office installed, you can install OpenOffice anyway. Just when it starts up, read the screens as you're installing it, and it will tell you that, you know, it'll say, what types of files do you want me to take over? And don't let it take over the Word and Excel documents and stuff, and you'll still be able to run Word.
And it's available in 45 languages for 7 platforms.
Yep.
And even if you do use it to create your Word files and create your Excel files, you can send those files to someone using Microsoft Office, and they'll never know.
I have a Linux box at work, and I run OpenOffice all day long every day. And I share files, and pretty sophisticated files, with my faculty and the staff and the students. And nobody knows, you know, that I'm not running OpenOffice. They don't know that I'm running a different format, because I can read everything they send me. I can write stuff that they can read. It all just works transparently. And like I said, if you're a Windows user, you can have both. Assuming you got enough disk space, of course, you can have both products on your machine at the same time and run it and play with it. Like I've said many times, OpenOffice is different from Microsoft Office. It does all the same things. It's just that the screens look a little different. And like I've said before, it's like buying a new car. You know, you buy a new car, you still know how to drive. It's just that the controls are in a different place. You don't know where the radio is, and it takes you a few days to get used to that. You know, where are the heater things? How do you turn on the lights? That stuff. You still know how to run. It's just a little different.
I've been driving my van for a couple years now, and my van has the gear shift on the floor. My wife's van has the gear shift on the steering wheel, and I'm still reaching to the wrong place when I'm in the wrong van.
I'll tell you what, for years I used to drive a stick. I love to drive stick, but my wife does not drive stick, is not interested in learning to drive stick, and she made the comment, and rightly so, when my daughter was born, that we needed to both be driving standards in case there was a problem and she needed to take my car. That's fair. I still to this day, and that's what, 10, 15 years ago that we started buying automatics, I still to this day every once in a while reach with my left foot on the clutch. Thank you. Thank you very much. Apparently I'm a little slow. I don't learn well. But yeah, it's you deserve OpenOffice.org. You should try it. It's at OpenOffice. That's all one word. .org. Pretty simple. Download it. Try it. It's multi-platform. It's multilingual. It's a pretty neat product. I'm very impressed by the quality, and they've made it much faster in the new one. And it's fully compliant with all the Windows stuff. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Ginny from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Good afternoon. By the way, Nick, I'm with you. I love driving a stick, too.
There you go. Stick users unite.
Pardon?
Unite. The stick people who drive stick.
Yes.
Now, 4 on the floor or 3 on the tree?
5.
5. Oh, there you go.
Overdrive.
See, overdrive. You're an overdrive kind of gal, Ginny.
Absolutely.
Get it in fifth and keep on trucking.
Right.
There you go. What's your question?
My question is SpyBot. The last 2 or 3 weeks, it keeps finding the same one problem. It's security, Windows security, antivirus, disable, notify. Every time it comes up, then I have it fix the problem. Next time I run it, same one comes up again.
Are you running the entire security Tango or just SpyBot?
SpyBot and Adware.
Yeah, here's the problem. The reason that I put together the security Tango is because of exactly this sort of problem. You've got some sort of spyware hiding somewhere in your system. And it could be hiding, as we said earlier, it could be hiding in the restore points. And every time you restart the system, it comes back again. It could be hiding anywhere. If you don't run the full security Tango in order, you can't be sure of getting rid of all the problems. And I wish I could say otherwise.
It could also be something as simpler as you're getting reinfected by the same spyware from whatever website, yes, it came from initially.
Yes.
A lot of the very common spyware programs, you go back to the website you got it from originally, and you get it again. And that's one of the issues between the free versions of the anti-spyware that we have on our Security Tango. Mm-hmm. They only scan for installed instances of the spyware. The pay versions of all the anti-spyware programs that we offer or talk about have a preventative feature built in. So it prevents the spyware from coming in the first place.
Oh, so this is just not something annoying from Windows.
No, well, it's likely not.
I see.
It clearly is more likely to be something of a real problem somewhere,
okay.
And yes, it could be that you're being, and Steve is absolutely right, it's very possible that you're simply being reinfected.
Okay, so I need to do all three.
Yeah, you need to dance the whole security tango. Once you see it, you'll see that it's a whole series of steps that do a whole bunch of different things, and I have to be honest, it's not that short a process, but I would suggest that doing it and downloading it and getting it all done is exactly what you need.
Okay, even though it will take out my restore points.
Well, that's the decision you have to make. If something is indeed hiding in the restore points, then the only way you're going to clean it is to get rid of the restore points. And I hate to say that, but I don't find the restore points as useful as a feature as much as it is a problem for spyware hiding.
And if you like, you can disable your restore points to make sure you're clean of spyware and then turn them back on again and set a point to, you know,
right,
to theoretically help you from other problems in the future, which is the restore point's purpose.
Right, exactly. So you can immediately set a new restore point. You can't go back before that, but you can certainly go back from there. And it's... you know, maybe I need to make that a little plainer on the website, but the reality is that you have to make a choice somewhere along the line between what you can
turn back on
later. I hate to say that. I'm very impressed. We've got 24 people listening to us over the Shoutcast stream right now. Now the problem with that is I capped it at 25 people.
Because we didn't think we'd need that many.
Because we didn't think we'd need that many. So if I see it filling up again next week, maybe I'll increase. It just takes more oomph out of the system, although the system's not really doing much else. It's actually the archive server. So all it would really mean is that anybody trying to download something might have a little trouble downloading something a little more. But I'm very, very pleased to see that more people, many of them out of this listening area, which is really kind of the point, are getting the show via the stream. I love that. Our next caller, Ken, from Greece, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
How you doing? I'm just calling. I just bought a new computer. I'm really new to this game here, and with the package that I bought, they installed Norton software there, and I went through the internet supplier that you advertised last week. I went through them, and they told me not to use it because what they supply is a lot better than Norton, and he says that if the two go into a certain spot, they might cancel each other out and shut your machine down or something.
Well, you certainly should never run more than one antivirus program at a time. That's absolutely true. As to which one is better and which one is worse, well, Ken, that's what makes horse races. Everybody figures one horse is better than another.
The one big issue that we see with new computers is you may only get like a 30-day license to the Norton program on your computer.
So it's a year's license.
That's a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah, and there's no reason not to run it. You know, everybody's got their favorite, but Norton is not a bad program, and in fact, it's actually lately gotten a lot better. So whether or not you want to use that one or a different one, it's all entirely up to you.
What I'm getting at, though, is the supplier for my internet already has it on it.
Right.
Now, can I call them up and tell them to take theirs off and I'll use Norton?
No,
they already paid for
they don't do anything.
No,
they install software on your computer only if you let them. So their software is not installed unless you installed it.
Right.
Okay.
Now, on the other hand, if you're going to stick with this internet service provider for several years, the reality is that you might as well move to their antivirus software since they're going to continue providing the updates.
And the other issue, too, is depending on which Norton package that it came with, you need more than just an antivirus. You need the firewall, you need the anti-spyware, you need a lot of different protection. And the packages that come with a lot of the ISPs offer the several different packages. Now, if you've got the Norton Internet Security Suite, that does a lot more than just the Norton antivirus package, depending
on... I got Spy Sweeper with it?
Yeah.
So you've got a couple of the pieces, but not all of them.
Right. Our you can use whichever one you like, and that's your choice entirely. It sounds like you would get more protection by using your ISP's full suite of packages rather than the Norton that you got. But in the long run, that's your choice.
It also makes a different support point. If you're having a problem with your antivirus, you'll have to call Norton if you're using Norton. If you're having a problem with your internet service, you call your internet provider.
Right.
So it depends on how many different people you want to necessarily call. And you can always just call us.
Exactly right, but only once a week. Our next caller is Jerry on a cell phone. Jerry, you're pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Hello.
Hi.
I have a virus on my computer. I'm not very computer literate. It's called backdoor.sdbot.
Sure.
And it's pointing me towards Norton Antivirus, which I already have, but I don't know how to get rid of it.
I think your best bet, and I know I sound like a broken record, but this is your best bet. Head on over to securitytango.com, securitytango.com, and follow and click the Let's Dance button and follow all of that stuff right from the top to the bottom. The backdoor virus is pretty insidious. You need to follow the tango step by step, and that'll clean it out for you and get you on a regimen to keep it clean. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray and Rob Linton, and when we come back, we'll talk about who should run the internet on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
This ain't these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton, waiting.
Beat. Yeah, we have a shy guest with us today.
Beat. Okay. Beat. All right. Listen, when we came back, we would talk about who should run the internet. There's something called the domain naming system. When you type in, for example, soundbites.org, the internet doesn't understand soundbites.org. It only understands a series of numbers, like 129.21.31.52. And what happens is there is a domain name system that takes that name you typed in and turns it into a number that the internet understands. The question is, who controls those names? Who decides that we could have soundbites.org or asknick.com or mac-av.com? Who decides these things? Well, that's the domain naming system. Right now, that is run by companies in the United States, mostly ICANN, the Internet Council for, I don't know, names and numbers, something. I don't remember what it stands for. Custody battles are always nasty, and it looks like that's going to continue. A recent proposal has been made to shift control of the internet from the United States to the United Nations. This resolution was brought by the UN, and the United States is fighting it. A shift in control would hand over decision power on top-level domains, that is to say .com, .org, .net, like that, to the UN. But it would also include things like getting rid of spam and consumer protection and root server maintenance. And it's a real question as to who should run these things. For example, Google uses Gmail as the email addresses. Well, in the UK, there's another company called Gmail already, and so they had to call their product Google Mail because somebody else already has Gmail. And a lot of people out in the rest of the world claim that using the name Gmail was both short-sighted and United States-centric. Yahoo cooperated with an investigation leading to a Chinese man's 10-year prison sentence for saying things that the Chinese government didn't like. There was a U.S.-based group that fought to free 20 bloggers who were imprisoned in Iran. So the move to keep control of the web here in the United States, it's garnered bipartisan support among a lot of Americans, but it's yet one more thing alienating us from the rest of the world. So the question is, who do you think should control the internet domain names? And shockingly enough, that's our poll of the week. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you'll find that 95 people have voted already. And the choices actually were pretty simple this time. The choices were the United States, the United Nations, the United Network Command for Law and Enforcement, Apple, of course, and someone else. Leave a comment. Now, the United States and the United Nations are really the two serious ones. Having written United twice, it clearly came to me to write United Network Command for Law and Enforcement. There's like six people in the world who knows that's Uncle, the man from Uncle.
And the woman from Uncle later on.
And the woman from Uncle later on. I had to put in something for Apple so that the Macintosh people would have something to click on. And if you think that those are all wrong and it should be somewhere else, that's where you get to vote. Like I said, so far about 95 people have voted. And overwhelmingly, 43% of you think the United States should be in charge. 16% of you think the United Nations should be in charge. 15% of you are living in TV land. Another 15% of you think someone else should be doing it. And 11 people just randomly clicked on Apple because that's what they do. So please leave us a vote in the poll. When you're done with that, underneath you'll see a yellow box. Particularly if you've clicked on someone else, leave a comment. Click on the Give Us Your Opinion button. That takes you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Thank you. Sounds like the elevator door won't close. What kind of a noise was that? Okay. There we go. Thank you very much. And then you can leave more of a comment. Please keep it clean. I'm going to cut out all of the jingoistic, nationalistic stuff, whether it's United States or somebody else. And I'd like you to do that. So let us know what you think. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we've got Rick on a cell phone. And we'll be talking about, yes, there's another virus that hit another Microsoft patch. Once is never enough. Join us when we come back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We're going to get back to the phones in just a minute, but I just want to mention there is yet one more bug out for an unpatched system. This is something that Microsoft patched months ago. Why are there still unpatched systems out there? Get your systems patched. Patch, patch, patch. That's all I want to say about that, and I've said it. And I'm happy now. Thank you very much. And don't forget, I'm going to be, when I leave here, I'll be hustling my little car down to CompUSA and having fun there for a couple hours. So if you haven't had enough sound bites here, come down and check out what's going on at CompUSA in Jefferson Plaza right after this show. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to Rick on a cell phone. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
I love your show. I don't get to listen as often as I would like because I'm on the road a lot, and but I appreciate
you
all
can
the
download the
you,
you can download the podcast, put it on your little MP3 player, and take it with you,
or even listen on your your car.
Well, if I get one for Christmas, I'll do that.
There you go. Put it on your list.
You can always put it on your computer and then transfer it to tape.
I told the screener I had one.
You got what?
I got two quick questions. I told the screener I had one, but
yeah, you lied.
First question is quick. I'm sorry. First question was I bought the SpyBot.
Yeah.
I bought a 3-time use one.
Yep.
My computer crashed. I had to take it in and get it fixed. Now, when I got it back home, I had to load on again. That took away one of my second uses.
Yes.
Do you think SpyBot might say, well, fine, we'll give you another number you can use for the next one?
It certainly can't hurt to ask them. I've honestly never had that problem, and so I don't know what their response would
be. Well, you don't have the problems I have. Anyway,
yeah.
Thank you. Second question is the best security for a home computer. I know Norton antivirus is good, but if you don't buy it new every year, you don't get everything.
That's the same with every antivirus program.
Yeah, everyone. AVG has a free version. They're listed on the Security Tango website, but it doesn't provide as much. I think it's great. I use it all the time. I'm very impressed and very pleased with it. But there are some things that it doesn't do automatically that you have to do manually. That's part of what you don't pay for.
I like the automatic thing. That's what I like. Another question is, what do you think of Barracuda Networks?
For what?
For their antivirus, anti-spyware.
I have not had a lot of experience with Barracuda, I'm afraid. Not one of the ones I've had a lot of experience with. I'll certainly research it, but I don't have an answer for you right now. Our next caller, Joe on a cell phone. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, doing okay. Yesterday, I'm working on the computer. I got on the internet. The firewall from Norton popped up, said this program, it started with a VM something, was trying to access the internet and said, what do you want to do? And the recommendation was to block it. So I checked the box, said permanently blocked. So it blocks it. And then a couple of minutes later, it says Norton's identified a virus. And it went back to that same file, and it's identifying it now as a Trojan low.
Okay.
And then, what's that? Yeah, Trojan.low. And then anyways, I tried to have Norton fix it, says it can't fix it, can't delete it. I look for the file itself, you know, through Explorer, and I try, I find the file, and I try to delete it. It's listed as an application.
Okay, Joe, one last time, it's the Security Tango. The whole point of the Tango is to take care of things like this. SecurityTango.com, start right at the beginning, click that Let's Dance button, start right at the beginning and follow every step. Don't skip any, don't shortcut any, and you'll be on your way. Looks like we are actually done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray and the great Rob Linton. We've had a great time here. Please don't forget to vote in the poll. I think it's pretty interesting. We've gotten a decent number of votes so far, and we've gone over 100. So far, the United States has half the votes. Of course, United Network Command for Law and Enforcement has 13% of the vote, so I don't know how seriously we can take this whole poll. But I want to thank you. We'll be back next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM. And join me at CompUSA right now. I'm going there now.